You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Welcome to Full Power Living, the only show on international media dedicated to the exploration and understanding of emotions and their role in human life. I'm Eileen Dillon, your creator and host, and we invite you to interact with us on our chat, either on the emotionalpro.com page, radio page, or the blogtalkradio.com/FPL page. And you can also speak directly with our guests. We have a toll-free number, 800-630-7858.
And do remember that this guest is to death of applause.
Do remember what, Swami?
That this guest is pretty deaf.
Ah, okay. So, we're in the midst of a transformation. It's a spiritual transformation. It does involve a breaking apart of the old, such as we've been seeing in the Middle East recently, but it also involves an unfolding of the spiritual. What you may not be aware of is all the preparations that have been taking place over the years to make this time possible for all of us, to give us this transformation, the foundations for success. And one of the people who paved the way is a man named Paramhansa Yogananda, who came to the U.S. in the early part of the 20th century on a mission. He left his earthly body in 1952, and his work has been carried on by his disciples. The last still-teaching direct disciple of Paramhansa Yogananda, the world-famous spiritual leader and author of Autobiography of a Yogi, a man who's credited with bringing meditation and yoga to the West, is our guest today. He's the author of The New Path, My Life with Paramhansa Yogananda. Swami Kriyananda was trained by Paramhansa Yogananda to spread the life-transforming teachings of Kriya Yoga around the globe. He's widely considered one of the world's foremost experts on meditation, yoga, and spiritual practice. He's authored nearly 100 books on these topics. He's the founder of Ananda Sangha, a worldwide organization committed to the dissemination of Yogananda's teaching, and in 1968, he founded Ananda World Brotherhood Village, the first spiritual cooperative community based on Yogananda's vision of world brotherhood colonies. Today, Ananda includes 7 spiritual communities in the U.S., Europe, and India, and over 100 meditation groups worldwide. So, Swami Kriyananda, it is my honor to welcome you to Full Power Living.
Well, it's both my pleasure and my honor.
Great. So you spent your lifetime, since you were a very young man in your early 20s, as a disciple of Paramhansa Yogananda.
Yes.
And I think it would help if you tell us exactly what being a disciple is all about and why you chose to be one.
Well, I'll tell you. When I read Autobiography of a Yogi, I had never been seeking anybody to teach me. I had never thought that I would be anybody's disciple. I didn't know anything about spiritual teachings, especially those of the East. It was an absolute revelation to me. I read it in New York. I took the next bus across the country to Los Angeles, and I just said the first words I said to him were, "I want to be your disciple." And to me, this meant I want to absorb what you've got to give.
Uh-huh. And so you spend several hundred pages of your book telling us who Paramhansa Yogananda is. So this might be a difficult question to answer in brief form, but who is he? And why do you think you chose him as to be his disciple?
Why he chose what?
Why you chose him.
Oh, I didn't have any choice. I just knew this was for me, and I was directed to it. There was no choice in the matter at all. I just knew this was right. When I read in his book that he was a vegetarian, I became a vegetarian immediately. When he said he was a monk, I became a monk. Everything he did, I just wanted to follow, because I knew, and it was far beyond any reasoning. I just knew this was for me. And that was 63 years ago, nearly.
Mm. And so, who was Paramahansa Yogananda?
Well, you can tell the story of him as a man. He was born in Bengal. He was sent by his gurus to America, and he settled in Los Angeles. He started the Self-Realization Fellowship. He awakened interest in yoga in millions of Americans. And his impact while living was enormous. Now, that doesn't tell very much. Even though it was a dramatic story, the true story of who he was is that he is who all of us are. He was aware of something that we just don't know. He was a child of God. He was one with God. And our destiny as souls is to reach the same stature. He was a very great soul. He was a completely liberated soul who had no desire except to help other people to find who they themselves were.
Wow.
As a human being, I found him delightful. He had an absolutely wonderful sense of humor, and he could laugh till the tears ran down his cheeks sometimes. And yet he was so wise, he was not at all the image that I had formed in my mind of a wise man. He wore his wisdom sort of like a comfortable old jacket. And he could be completely natural and relaxed. Right? But in his presence, I would feel an immense love and immense joy. And not emotional. Something much deeper than emotional.
Huh. Immense joy. Like a joy that would fill you entirely or fill you and beyond.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned now that he was sent to the West by his own teachers to help awaken us spiritually. And I know in your book you mentioned that, and we'll talk about this later, but you mentioned that Jesus was concerned that Westerners had left out part of what he wanted us to know. Can you tell us what that was?
He himself said that he was sent to the West by Jesus Christ, you know, to help Westerners to understand that true Christianity is not churchianity. It is the individual soul's need for God, need to experience God. The usual definition of a Christian is somebody who believes. Belief doesn't do it. People for centuries believed that the world was flat. That didn't make it so. You have to experience truth. And that was what he showed us how to do.
Well, that was one of the things that was a little surprising to me, and you note that it was surprising to you also, that Jesus was involved in the mission of this line of gurus from India. Can you explain your understanding of how that is?
Well, I'm not quite sure where your question is coming from. I'll explain it from my point of view. I grew up with a Christian tradition, and I have to admit that God in that tradition seemed hopelessly boring. I just didn't want that kind of God in my search for truth, which began as a young teenager, 13-year-old. I had left God out of the picture completely, because I felt that that's not the God I want. That's not what I'm looking for. But I found that every single path without God never could go anywhere. I wanted to help humanity. And I saw that the only people in history who had offered any lasting help to humanity were the great masters, Jesus Christ, etc. And so I realized I had to get some idea as to what God really is. And I remember a long walk I took outside Charleston, South Carolina, into the countryside one night, and I asked myself, if there's a God, what must he be? And I realized that he must be consciousness, because it was my consciousness that I'm asking this question. And I realized that I'm a part of that consciousness. And the more open I am to that consciousness, the more fulfilled I feel, whereas the more closed off I am, for instance, by drinking or something, the less I feel of it. And so my duty in life must be to seek God. From then on, I gave my life to God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you. Well, one of the things that we have talked about on this show, and that I think you're also discussing in your book, is the different understandings that people have about their relationship with God. Some people are thinking they're separate from God, and others are thinking they are one with God. What's the position that you and Paramhansa Yogananda take on this?
Okay, the position is that God dreams this entire universe. It's easier for us to say this now, because in 1905 they discovered that matter doesn't exist except as a vibration of energy. That all the solid things that we think we see around and have around us, including our bodies, just are not that at all. It's a wave of energy. Well, we believe that everything, finally, that energy is a wave of thought, countless waves of thought. And that those thoughts come from divine consciousness. So our belief is that God dreamed this entire show, and that we are a part of that dream. Our ideal in life, our goal in life, is to awaken from the dream and realize that he is the doer of everything, that we are a part of him, and in the end we are he.
I like that approach too, that we are a part. One person that we had on the show pointed out that when you're separate from God, then it splits us up, and it also puts God in the position of making judgments. And I didn't find that that was the kind of God you were addressing with Yogananda, that he was a judgmental God.
Not at all. We judge ourselves. When we do wrong, it's we who judge ourselves. This is one of the questions I asked on that walk out into the darkness. I thought, God can't be a judge. He's got to be more than that. And that's when I came upon consciousness.
One of the thoughts that I had as I was reading your book, I kept trying to imagine myself as a renunciate of devoting my entire life to the service of God as completely as I could, as you have done. And I realized what a very different life it would be. And yet, both you and Paramhansa Yogananda were in the world and not in the world at the same time. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about what that's like.
Well, you know, we do believe in that. And most of our members are not renunciates. However, I have just recently, within the last 2 or 3 years, founded a new Swami order, a Naya Swami. Naya means new. A new renunciate order. And it embraces people of all paths, not just our own path. And it shows that the positive side of renunciation is not rejection, but embracing. Embracing that freedom that comes when you get rid of the ego. Embracing the bliss of God that comes when you go beyond your self-preoccupations to embrace infinity. And it emphasizes the positive aspects of renunciation. And whether you're married or single, it just doesn't matter. You can give yourself to God in this way. And it understands that progress is a relative thing. It's a progressive thing. Nobody is an absolute renunciate. It's always progressive. And so whatever your stage of life If you know that your direction is oneness with him, then you can join his order. I remember in Italy, two or three years ago, I met a Catholic priest, and he saw me in my new blue robes that I had designed. And he said, well, what is this order? I told him. He said, how many people in the order? I said, one. But now it's 600, and it's growing rapidly.
Wow, that's just amazing. Another part that really struck me was that Yogananda was your every thought and action and deed was available to him, even if he wasn't in your vicinity. And that's a lot of transparency. And I believe that that's the kind of transparency we need in order to be more integrated with God. But could you talk about what it's like to live with that kind of transparency regarding another person?
Your wording is a little strange to me, but I think what you're saying is, can Yogananda help me even now?
Well, that's a good question. That's not what I was asking, but do answer that one, and then I'll go on to the other one.
Well, he can and does, and I have found his guidance constantly with me. A very interesting thing just came to my mind this morning. I think of God as my Divine Mother, and whether it's Yogananda or the Divine Mother is trivial. But I was playing a game of bridge with my parents, and they wanted to play of theirs for a penny a point. That's very little. But I just don't like gambling. It means taking money from somebody else that I didn't earn. I just don't like it. And so I said, Divine Mother, I have to be obedient to my parents, and I, after all, I was disobedient in a big way by seeking you, but in little ways at least, let me try. So I said, please help me out. My score at the end of the evening was zero. I think the chances against that are astronomical.
Well, now, if I do not if I were not to dedicate myself to being a follower of Yogananda, could I still call on him?
Why not? He's the father of the whole humanity. In fact, there was a lady who was the mother of one of our members, and she only spoke Spanish, but she came up to Ananda, and she had a vision of him. I'd say most of us probably have not had visions of him. She did. And she asked him, do you often come here? He said, I'm always here. But he helped her. He answered many questions that she had to ask. And he has come to people who were members of other paths and devoted members of other paths. He didn't come to convert them. Masters like him are not sectarian. Mm-hmm. With the pure heart, they want to help.
And his whole church and the Self-Realization Fellowship was set up to embrace all religions and sects. Is that correct?
They have become extremely sectarian. However, that was his purpose.
One of the things that we focus on here is emotions. And I note that in the New Path, My Life with Paramahansa Yogananda, you many times mentioned that Yogananda talked with you about your moods. And I was thinking that a lot of people have pressures in every area of life, and perhaps what you learned about moods and how to deal with them would be helpful to our listeners. What can you tell us about that?
You know, I have never been a moody person, so I think maybe what we're talking about is a little bit of an exaggeration here. Nonetheless, it's true that when I did have a mood one day, and I didn't know what to do with it because all my reasoning endorsed the mood. So I thought, well, if this reasoning isn't going to help me out, let me try something else. And I changed my level of consciousness by putting my mind strongly at the point between the eyebrows And in 5 minutes, it was completely gone. I saw all the reasons why everything was positive and so on.
Uh-huh. So you went more directly to the spiritual point in where you looked, but also you changed what you were placing your attention on.
I changed my level of consciousness.
Yes, that's wonderful. Thank you. Well, I didn't mean to misjudge you there about moods, so thank you for clarifying that, too.
Okay.
One of the ways you describe your relationship with Paramhansa Yogananda is that you had friendship in God, and that it required nothing less than totally turning yourself over to the will of God. And I was wondering how difficult that path is.
You know, I didn't find it difficult, but I was a very independent person. And when I first met him, he gave me his unconditional love. He asked for my unconditional love in return. And then he asked for my unconditional obedience. Well, I was desperate to be accepted, but I had to be truthful. And I said to him, but how can I offer you my unconditional respect, obedience, if I think you're wrong? And he said, I will never ask anything of you that God himself does not tell me to ask. So with that, I said, all right then, I give you my unconditional obedience. And I found that in every case, what he asked of me was what my own soul really wanted.
Do you have that assurance in you that that when you make a decision or make a request of somebody that it's coming from God? And if so, how do you
know? No, I don't at all. Not on his level. And I always try to tell people that if this rings true, do it. If it doesn't, don't.
Uh-huh.
I'm not interested in unconditional obedience. I'm not even interested in obedience. I ask people for their cooperation.
Well, when he was talking obedience, he was really talking obedience to God, not to him as a person.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's what he clarified for you.
Yeah.
Well, it's time for us to take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk about what Paramahansa Yogananda had to say about saints and sinners. Okay?
Okay. Yes.
This is Full Power Living, and we'll be right back. We're talking today with Swami Kriyananda, who's author of The New Path, My Life with Paramahansa Yogananda, which has won two awards, the Eric Hoffer 2010 Book Award in the Spiritual Self-Help category, and also top honors in the Spiritual Book category for the 2010 USA Book News Award. So, Swami, you've come a long way from your days of writing plays in association with the Dock Street Theater in Charleston, South Carolina.
Well, there I am.
I know you said it in your book, so maybe we'll make it clear here. You're now 82 years old, is that correct?
I'm going to be 85 in May.
85? Wow. The book has been out longer than I thought. I'm sorry I didn't check that. Wow. That's really a long life of service. So I do appreciate also that the cost of the book is under $15, even though it's a very big book. Where can people get the book?
In any bookstore, I think.
Okay.
They can also get it by writing ananda.org.
Ananda, ananda.org.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And with www, I suppose, before it.
Yes. So that's www.ananda.org.
Uh-huh.
Now, before the break, I said that I want to talk about Paramahansa Yogananda's ideas about saints and sinners. You have a quote. You say that he said a saint is a sinner who never gave up.
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
Well, it's so important to understand that, of course, we've got defects. It's sort of like a story when I was 21, before I came to Yogananda, before I got on the spiritual path even, but I just felt that I must be on this path. And I thought of being a hermit. And I thought, whoever heard of a hermit who smokes, he couldn't go to town to get his cigarettes. And so I decided to give it up. And it was like what Mark Twain said, that he said, smoking is the easiest thing in the world to give up. I've done it 1,000 times. So with me, I would give it up in the morning and want it again with my coffee after lunch. And every time I went back to smoking, I never said I have failed. I always said I have not yet succeeded. And so my failure itself became an affirmation of potential success. After a year of this, all of a sudden, I knew I just didn't want smoking anymore. I gave it up and never even thought about it again.
Wow. There are a lot of people who could be encouraged by that.
It's important, and with your sins also. Just say, don't say, I'm a sinner. Yogananda used to say that the worst sin is to call yourself a sinner. You're a child of God who's made mistakes, but you can correct those mistakes. And if you fail in the effort 100 times, 1,000 times, still, sooner or later, you must succeed. So never say, I failed. That'll just put you back for another incarnation. Say, I have not yet succeeded.
Well, I really like that, and one of the difficulties I've had with the Christian religion I was brought up with was the whole idea that there's so much focus on sin, it seems to wear a person down instead of really allowing them to be successful, as you're talking
well,
about.
Well, exactly. And in the monasteries, I accuse myself of so-and-so. What kind of a teaching is that?
Yeah. Well, I really liked your comments about the difficulties you had with what I call organized religion, but which is really the Christianity version that I grew up with, I guess. Paramhansa Yogananda, he left his body in 1952.
Yes.
And you have been carrying on his work by writing and by establishing spiritual communities like Ananda, which is in the foothills, one of the places is in the foothills of the Sierras in California. And as I was mentioning to you before we got on the air, I came there for a couple of days close to 40 years ago, and it was a beautiful place and a wonderful experience. And I had never meditated or chanted before, and I still can hear, "Oh God, beautiful," in my head, or can sing it still. And so I wanted to ask you to tell us about the spiritual community and Yogananda's dream for them, why they're important.
I tell you, they are important. I think they're vitally important. I've dedicated my life to starting them. Now I've started about 8 already, including Italy and India. But I feel that for 2 reasons. One, for the individual. If you're seeking God, or if you're seeking art, whatever it might be, there might be other kinds of community, but most certainly if you're seeking God, it's much more difficult when everybody around you is living a worldly life. You end up thinking you're doing a good thing if you help a little old lady across the street. There's so much more to the spiritual path. When you're surrounded by spiritual seekers, then your aspirations turn toward the heights and they stay fixedly there. That's one reason. The other reason is that I'm quite sure that we're entering a very great depression, much worse than the 1930s. And if people will only get land and live together as a group, they will save themselves a great deal of sorrow.
What is life in the communities like?
What are communities like?
Yes.
Well, I mean, what are people like? What is life like? It's just, all right, let me try at least to answer what to me seems like an impossible question. But we have our own homes. We have a temple we go to. People cook their own food. They have their own families. They're monks as well as householders, and monks and nuns, I should say, as well as householders. And we have a school there for children that teaches children how to live, not just how to make a living. And we have ways to support ourselves through different businesses. We would certainly not allow butcher shops there, but businesses that are uplifting and serviceable. We have a countryside where we live, vast amounts of greenery, peace of mind, and the most important thing, when you come onto our property, you went there many years ago, I suppose it was somewhat that way then, but it's much more now, that the vibrations of the place just uplift you by going onto them. That's about as much as I can tell you, except that we have people of all kinds, from all levels of society, from all races, and anybody is welcome who loves God and wants to know Him.
Well, I apologize for making my question so difficult, but you answered it exactly
okay.
What I was looking for, so thank you. And let me remind people that they can find out more by going to www.ananda.org. On our chat, Swami, a person has made a comment that her careful listening connects her to the heart that you speak from.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
She says that she's listening carefully to you, and it's connecting her to the heart that you are speaking from.
She has trouble connecting with it?
She's feeling connected to
your heart. Oh, she feels my
heart.
Yes. Well, I'm grateful for that, because that's where I speak from.
Yes.
Yes,
so
I'm grateful for that.
Good, thank you. We also have a question. Are the communities a refuge for the homeless and troubled people, whose numbers will increase in the hard times, or are they meant only for the residents?
We will serve as much as we can. We can't do more. We can't lift up the whole world. But we do try to help people. As far as accepting homeless people there, no, we accept people who believe in our ideals. If they're homeless and believe in those ideals, that's fine. But in other words, we don't judge people in terms of whether they're homeless or not, but we try to serve people who are open to our kind of service.
I like that response. Thank you. Now, another man that we had on this program who wrote, Michael Brown, he wrote Alchemy of the Heart, he says that when we're being intimate with one another, we're practicing being intimate with God. And we need ultimately to bring our own vibratory level to the place where it can merge with the vibratory level of God.
I'd agree with that, except for one thing.
Yes.
It's got to be a giving love, not a taking love.
So you have to give love to God, you mean?
And to other people.
And to other people.
Yeah.
And
there's a statement in India, that a wife marries her husband not for the sake of the husband only, but she feels through him the divine husband of God. And a man looks upon his wife in the same way as a manifestation of the divine mother. So always we should be other consciousness, or conscious.
Do you believe that we also extend that love to ourselves, even if we don't concentrate on it all the time?
Well, when it comes from ourselves to others, naturally the channel is blessed by that which flows through it.
Ah, thank you. I appreciate that differentiation. So, I don't know if this is a different activity that you're doing, being on the radio promoting your book, or one that you've engaged in many times. Is this a different? Are you really trying to get the message out to larger groups of people now?
Well, I mean, you asked a very interesting question. The truth is, I don't want to be on the radio anymore. I want to move up to the village. I did do it for a while because I do want people to know about it, but with me becoming nearly 85, I'll tell you, I gave a class on success on Tuesday, and my heart was affected, and I thought, well, I must stop this kind of activity.
Well, we certainly appreciate your time. I just really feel honored that you are doing this, and I certainly intend for you to reach a lot of people through this vehicle. Most of us have never had the kind of connection that you had with Paramahansa Yogananda. You describe him as like a highly polished mirror. And I wondered if you could tell us one or two stories about what it was like to live around or with a highly polished mirror in Yogananda.
Well, you know, I would notice that. Okay, one time I was invited to be in Beverly Hills to, it was a bar mitzvah. I'm not Jewish, but they wanted me to do the yoga postures. So I did. But then a Jewish psychiatrist who was an atheist began grilling me afterwards. And I tried to help him to have some kind of faith by telling him some miracles that I'd seen. And I could see him mentally thinking, well, at 11 o'clock Wednesday, I have an opening with his patient. And so it didn't help at all. Well, I saw Yogananda two or three days later, and we were talking, and afterwards he said, oh, by the way, when you're talking with materialists and atheists, don't mention miracles. I said, you knew. He said, I know every thought you think. That was an extraordinary statement. He knew every thought I thought. He knows it now. But the thing is, he was a mirror to us, and he could tell us, this is the right thing to do, that was the wrong thing to do. One time, there was a church member, and I was a minister there in the church, and so I told this minister, this member, that I would be lecturing on Thursday night in the church. And he said, oh, in that case, I'll be sure to be there. Well, I knew he wasn't sincere, and it just bothered me that he would try to make me think that because I would be there, that he would be there. So I tried to deflect it by saying, then would you please check people's pockets to make sure they haven't brought any vegetables to throw? It wasn't a very gracious or dignified thing to say. And when I saw Yogananda later, he said, when you're with members, don't talk about vegetables. It's not dignified.
Well, now I'm interested in this statement that that when you're talking with atheists or materialistic type people that you don't mention miracles. When I studied in the spiritualist church, they had a principle they called the law of what can be born, B-O-R-N-E, that you don't offer people more than they can handle.
What I was not doing. I was wrong.
Well, yeah. It's very difficult to figure out sometimes, isn't it?
Well, you have to feel it. But after many years, I have some experience, I can say. What I do is I tell a little bit, and if they respond positively, then I'll tell more.
Well, you have such a richness. Now, your actual in-the-life association with Paramahansa Yogananda only lasted 3.5 years. Is that correct?
Well, that's more than Jesus' disciples had.
I hadn't thought of that. He made a profound. So he made a really profound impression on you. I know that you have to believe in the power of books, of the written word, because reading Autobiography of a Yogi brought you to Paramahansa Yogananda.
Yeah.
You say that the spiritual path requires courage and dedication and the absolute conviction that only God can ever satisfy the soul's yearning for true happiness. And so for those who have been brought to you today on this program through your book, what do you want them to understand relevant to their own spiritual seeking?
How they can be that which they are seeking themselves. I don't care about myself. I'm interested in teaching principles.
All right, thank you. We have another question that came in. When we live in love with one another, will we be in the same kind of intimacy that of the closeness that you had with Paramahansa Yogananda?
You know, it depends on how giving ourselves are. If we give of ourselves, we gain. If we are with others for what we can get out of them, we don't gain.
So really, loving and giving that love is a primary focus that you would...
Well, let me put it this way. I had a dream in Florence, Italy, several years ago, in which I saw several hundred people, all of them seeking something. And I realized that what they were all looking for, even though they thought that it was money, even though they thought that it was pleasure, even though they thought that it was power, et cetera, et cetera, what all of them were seeking for was joy, was bliss. And I thought, that's my reason for loving everybody, because all of them want the same thing, bliss. And so I love everybody, because I know that that's what they all want.
Thank you. You say that the ultimate goal of human experience is graduation from bondage to ego into cosmic consciousness. And you say that involves a process of removal of all confining attachments and desires, the expansion of love, and a growing realization that God is the one underlying reality of the universe.
And yes.
We're all heading in this direction. We're just going at different speeds.
And sometimes in different directions for a while, by mistake. But that's the ultimate direction.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of like climbing a mountain. Sometimes you have to go down in order to go up higher.
Uh-huh. And so, you know, one of the things that I kept wondering about is why... I'm a person who loves God, and I am aware that God is ever equal to one's understanding, but I love the God that I understand, and I dedicate myself to helping others, but I have not become a disciple or renounced everything. Is it just that we're on different places in our journey, that different ones make different decisions?
I wouldn't make even that judgment.
Ah, we just are.
I mean, how different is it, really?
Okay, good point. Thank you.
Yeah.
I just want to tell you that I was totally touched when we were talking about heart. My heart really opened, especially in the portion of your book, The New Path, My Life with Paramahansa Yogananda, especially there when you were talking about him and telling the stories about him. It just totally opened, and I felt such a flow of love. And I want to thank you so much for offering something that's written that can open people's heart in that way.
Thank you very much for saying so. It's been my deep desire to accomplish just that.
So I want to ask you before we part company then, is there anything else that you want to say to the people who are listening today?
I would say that above everything else,
try it again, please.
Above everything else, love God.
Thank you so much for your time, for writing The New Path, My Life with Paramahansa Yogananda, that people can get everywhere and they can find out more about what you're still doing with Ananda at www.ananda.org. And Swami Kriyananda, thank you so much for bringing this message to us and to the world, and for your time here on Full Power Living today.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
My honor. Bye-bye.